Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Aging Show, and we are continuing with Tom and Diane talking about Chris Radio. How do you market? Because to be honest with you, until Dawn brought this to my attention, I wasn't aware of it. And I could see so many uses of your service in our area that I want to get the word out.
Sure. Well, thank you for that. Actually, we are refocusing a lot of our energy to, you know, marketing our organization. One way, obviously, is we've gone through the media here. Since I've come on board, we've had, more than 24 articles written about us. We've been on TV, radio programs like yours. So that's one way we're marketing it. The other thing that we're launching is joining listservs for a group who actually could benefit from our service. And so we're sort of doing an online effort by joining these listservs and getting the word out. In fact, one of our major initiatives is to reach the 72,000 children who are receiving special education services in the state by launching a program about science, technology, the environment, and math, and reading about 11 magazines geared to children from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade. And the way we're reaching them, actually, is in addition to traditional marketing, we're going online with the listservs and telling their parents through these listservs that we have this program that might benefit their child.
That's fantastic.
Or educators as well, yeah.
That's great. How can Chris Radio be heard? We've talked about, obviously, the radios, which are special radios that you make available to a subscriber, or they can listen via your website. But there's other ways that they can listen, too.
That's right. Well, I mentioned we can be heard on streaming audio on our website, which is www.chrisradio.org. We also have people can get connected on their through their cable TV system, and they can connect their own FM radio to their cable, or the cable people can come out and hook it up for them so they can hear that. And it's on the SAP channel, the second audio channel, that they can hear it on that. We also have a program called Telephone Reader, and we've actually been revising and updating that system, and people can call in on a special phone number, and they hit their eligibility numbers, like a passcode, and they get in, and they can actually hear archive programming as well.
What's wonderful about the Telephone Reader is on the regular programming, you have like sports at 7:30, the front pages at 8 o'clock in the morning. The Telephone Reader, you can call in and you can get any article or any program any time of the day. And there are three areas in Connecticut where Chris isn't available through the radio: Waterbury, Litchfield, and some parts of out Norwich, New London area. And this is accessible to the people out there from Telephone Reader, as well as because they don't have the radio available.
Tom, you at the break mentioned
internet radios.
Right.
And this is something that is available in nursing homes, would assisted living facilities also?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Yep.
So this,
we would have
how does
to
this
provide,
work?
We would, it's a special, it's a better radio than the ones that we put in the homes. It's
internet.
It's an internet radio.
It's
a beautiful radio with great reception.
So you've covered all the bases. There's really no reason that someone in Connecticut couldn't access your broadcast either in an archive or in a live fashion.
That's correct. And actually, we also repeat from the midnight hour, we repeat the day's programming. So for people that who are night owls, we're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Diane, what is the process to apply for service?
All the folks need to do, they can either go to our website and download the application, and they would need to contact some type of healthcare provider or a social worker to verify that this person is indeed eligible for our service, which means that they are either have low vision, they are blind, or they have a physical disability or a learning disability. And that's an area that we really had not focused on very much, but now we are going to try to help that group as well.
Well, according to the Library of Congress, there's 1.4% of the population in every state is eligible for services from Chris Radio or the Books on Tape. So in Connecticut, that would be approximately 50,000, because there's 3.5 million people in Connecticut. So that's the population on top of what Diane was saying about the 73,000 children.
Yeah, there are 72,000 actually, or 72 and change thousand kids in the state of pre-K through grade 12 who are receiving special ed services, and those kids would also be eligible for our new children's programming.
But Diane, you've got, with 24 hours a day and all the initiatives that you have on board for the future and just launching in the immediate future, what is the fundraising that we need to know about? How can we help?
Oh, that's great. Thank you for asking, because we are going to be having our annual campaign the week of December 6th through December 10th, which is Chris Radio Week in Connecticut. And on our new redesigned website, people can simply hit the Donate Now button on our new website and send us a donation if they want to. We're also going to be sending out mailers. Or if folks want to just mail in a check, they can mail in a check at Chris Radio, 315 Windsor Avenue, Windsor, Connecticut, 06095. We're also having several fundraisers. We're going to various restaurants, and we're going to be posting those restaurants on our website. The restaurants are going to be donating a small portion of their proceeds, like, 5 to 10% of the evening's take, to Chris Radio. We're also having, for the very first time, a dining and dancing in the dark on April 9th. And that's going to be in South Windsor at a banquet hall there. And that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a dance-off, and we're going to have the dancing audio described. And we're going to have a lot of programs and a lot of fun things happening at that event. We're also going to have a golf classic, our 14th annual golf classic, on Wednesday, June 29th. And that is of next year, too. So if folks want to help us, please help.
I would get the award for the highest score in that as opposed to getting anywhere near par. But you also have something called Friends of Chris, is that right?
That's right. Our Friends of Chris, what we're offering businesses and organizations, we're offering them, they want to become a friend of Chris. We will give them on-air broadcast credit. In other words, not a call to action, but we would say this program was brought to you by, let's say it was Comfort Keepers. It would be Comfort Keepers, and then you would have your logo on our website, and we would give you recognition in the community for being one of our friends. So, and what we're doing is we have sort of outlined various price points, I guess you would say. If people want to commit for a year, they could donate a certain amount, and they get year-long underwriting credits. If they want to try it out for 13 weeks, it's obviously a lot less money. So we're looking for donations to help us keep our program going, because as everybody must realize, the economy has taken a real hit with nonprofits, and we have seen our funding decrease significantly.
Well, this is a wonderful gift for the holidays. It's definitely stretches goodwill in every direction. Diane, Connecticut, do you go out and speak in the community as well? Are you available for speaking engagements?
Absolutely. We also are launching a speakers bureau, and members of the board and some of our volunteers, we are trying to get that going sometime this winter. With the holidays, I don't know how many folks really want to hear about Chris Radio, but we're hoping to have folks available and schedule them for speaking engagements in December, and I also will be going to some of those as well.
Diane, is this a program that is being replicated in other states?
Yes, radio reading services have been around for about 30 years. The problem is that there have been several that have had to close their doors, and because the funding is just, this economy really hurt a lot of radio reading services. So our friends in Vermont, their service is no longer. The one in South Carolina, that one had to close. And so, there are other radio reading services, but we are, first of all, going to be the only ones offering programming for children, actually, throughout the nation. And that program is going to be unique to Connecticut, and we are also the only ones that offer local news in Connecticut.
Our show is also heard outside of Connecticut, mm-hmm. and so as a result, we have people that might be interested in this initiative or supporting initiatives that are already in existence. I think that it would be Radio Reader, is that the words that someone would be searching on the internet for?
Well, actually, with our it's Radio Reading Service, but it's also, if somebody Googles, let's say, Radio Reading Service in Connecticut or the handicapped, reading services for the handicapped, Chris Radio should pop up.
Okay. It's a great service. It was a fantastic idea at the time that it was initiated, and it remains I just wish that more people knew about it, and we'll do what we can to help that.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Tom, you're actually the resident historian.
Yes, if you want to call me that.
But we were looking at the Chris.
You're historical, or you are a historian?
Quite a few changes over the past 30 years.
Yes, it's like I mentioned before, Chris started in one room at State Board of Education and Services for the Blind in Wethersfield in 1979, 2 hours a day just in the Hartford area. And then shortly after that, we expanded to the Fairfield County area. And then, like Diane mentioned, now there is the four satellite locations. And basically, they do live broadcasts in the morning for a couple hours, and then at night for the regional roundup with all the local papers. And it's just been a wonderful service. And we started out Services for the Blind. We always were associated with them, and they provided us with the space at no cost. And then when the workshop closed at Services for the Blind several years ago, the landlord started charging us $4,500 a month, and that's when the board decided to build our own building. And now we have this beautiful building here in Windsor, and it's an exciting and challenging time for Chris, but I almost have tears in my eyes because I remember when it was one room in Wethersfield, and now we have this wonderful location, and now we have Diane to lead us into the future. And I think people like the people that work for you could refer people to us.
Absolutely.
They see people in their homes that don't even know that we existed.
Well, we would welcome any material, and you've got some brochures that if you could send them
sure.
to us, we would get them in other people's hands and actually add them to our mailings to some of our clients. But people just need to be aware that the blind have issues that the sighted don't, and we take for granted so much every day, and being able to read the details of a newspaper article, given the sound bites that we get on broadcast news, there's so much enjoyment and added information. It's a great service.
And a couple things I want to mention. Again, it's been blind. There's so many people that are physically disabled, even people like with dyslexia, someone who's allergic to chemicals and can't pick up a paper. So there's so many other people. And how you can help us also is the Lions Clubs. We didn't mention this. Are tremendous to us every year. They donated $50,000 last year. They
wow.
usually donate $30,000. And we have to reach out to Rotary, Kiwanis, Civitan, all these people, and let them know that they could help us with volunteers, referring clients, and donating money.
And Dennis, I really wanted the Lions Club. I'm so glad you brought that up, Tom,
because
wanted to mention it specifically.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
And Tom, it's been, I'm noticing here, in 1986, you began broadcasting 24 hours a day. So this is 24 years, 24 hours.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
That's right.
All right. Well, I want to thank Diane and Tom for coming on and talking about Chris Radio. This is something, again, I wasn't aware of. And until Dawn met you, Dawn wasn't aware of. So
no, you're right.
We'll help you get the word out.
Well, thank you so much for having us on. I really appreciate it because our service isn't just about information. We're really empowering people, informing people, and educating people about what's going on in their community and their world. And we truly are a lifeline to the community for individuals who cannot read a newspaper.
All right. Well, you'll hear more from us, too. Wasn't Karen Carpenter that died of, died of anorexia? And there have been a lot of notable people that have. And the reason we mention that is because there was an article in the October New York Times by Ronnie Rabin that talked about how bringing in family to combat anorexia has been proven to be a highly...
It's an effective treatment.
Effective way of doing it.
And it makes sense, Dennis.
The example given is a 13-year-old who was anorexic, and the trials and tribulations that the family had in just trying to get her to eat food. And
she's identifying here with this article that transition of eating, the example being the bagel with the cream cheese down to the...
They were negotiating.
Half the bagel, the bagel, then the bagel without the cream cheese, and smaller and smaller portions.
And there was a Dr. Daniel LaGrange, who was quoted as saying it's an anorexic debate. and it's not really helpful.
Now, he steps in to actually advise the parents, according to this, stating, it's mom and dad, it's your decision what she eats. You have to make the choices for her because the anorexia does not allow her to think clearly.
Right. So, and he's a proponent of not the traditional treatment for anorexia, where the patient sees a therapist one-on-one. What he is practicing is a kind of family-based treatment that encourages parents to play a pivotal role in restoring their child's weight while trying to avoid hospitalization.
And it's a demanding program. For the first 2 weeks of treatment, at least one parent must be available around the clock to supervise meals and snacks and monitor children in between meals to make sure that they don't burn off calories with excessive exercise. That is going to be a very diligent project.
It certainly can be. Now, Dr. LaGrange is with the University of Chicago, but the process is called the Maudsley Method, which started in London, and it was developed
at the Maudsley Hospital.
The study published this month in the Archives of General Psychiatry is one of just a handful of clinical trials that have evaluated treatment for anorexia in adolescents. They did a study 12 months after the treatment had ended.
49% of those who had been in family therapy were in full remission, more than double the 23% of those who had been in individual therapy. That's really encouraging statistics.
And among patients who were in remission at the end of the treatment itself, only 10% of the family therapy groups had relapsed a year later, compared with 40% of those who had individual therapy. I mean, that speaks volumes.
And Mrs. Rinelli was stating that had given her the tools to say, you're going to sit down and eat this, and I will be there for you and to help you through this. So maybe curtailing this earlier, maybe this will stop it earlier and hopefully not have the lingering damage that can sometimes happen that goes on for years.
Well, what was interesting is this requires that, as you said earlier, both parents have to be on board with this and be very attentive, and they have to be on the same page. And it can't be one that is the disciplinarian and the other say, well, let her slip a day and just let up a little bit. It's got to be a consistent message, and it's got to be a consistent process.
And certainly with that coordination with the parents, because it's a difficult time. It's anorexia is difficult, but the age that it tends to strike is also difficult.
Well, here's something that I didn't know. It was perceived this way. Unlike traditional approaches, the Maudsley Method says we don't think the parents are to blame for the problem. We think they're part of the solution and should be center stage. Their job is to be calm, supportive, and consistent. I would think that it was more peer pressure. I wouldn't have pointed to the parents as being the problem, cause of the problem.
I think I'm taking it further out, Dennis, to our magazine covers.
Oh, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it really is. In particular, young women are so obviously much more susceptible than the young men of the same age.
There is a book that was written by Harriet Brown. It is entitled The Brave Girl Eating, A Family Struggle with Anorexia. This is a story of Mrs. Brown's own family struggle with her daughter's condition. And while her daughter was in adolescent-focused therapy, she said the therapist told her that parents should not be the food police and that therapy had to get to the root causes of the problem before her daughter could resume eating. She says it doesn't work that way.
You need the physical recovery first and then the cognitive recovery.
The patient is racked with guilt, anxiety, feelings that she's fat and loathsome if she eats, and it was our job to be louder and drown out those voices in her head.
Wow.
Stay tuned, and we'll be back in a minute.